Please, O Lord, our God, make the words of your Torah sweet in our mouths. Please, O Lord, our God, make the words of your Torah sweet in our mouths, in the mouths of your people, in the mouths of the house of Israel, in the mouths of your people, in the mouths of the house of Israel.
Now, come and speak to us.
We go together. Well, it's a pleasure to get to share with you guys. And Nathan invited me to give the drash this week. And I haven't done that in many years. So when I looked at the Parsha, it was Parsha Yitro, and contains the Ten Commandments, and I got really intimidated, and I thought, oh, I can't do this. I'm no scholar. What do I know about the Ten Commandments that people don't already know? Well, I got a quick lesson from Nathan. He gave me the download, who insightfully shared with me that the Hebrew doesn't even refer to these pillar statements as commandments at all, but actually the Hebrew used is devarim, or words. So reading from the Tree of Life translation, Exodus 20, verse 1 reads, "Then God spoke all these words, saying," see, it says words, not commandments, which would be the Hebrew word mitzvot. Then continuing to verse 2, "I am Adonai your God, who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of bondage." So in Jewish tradition, that is the first word. Now stopping right there, if you grew up going to Jewish Sunday school, your list of the Ten Commandments would look slightly different than your typical Christian Sunday school list. In the Christian version, they add on the next verse as part of the first commandment or word, Exodus 20, verse 3, "You shall have no other gods before me." So really, the emphasis in this case is that we shouldn't worship other gods. Whereas in the Jewish tradition, the emphasis is on simply the existence of God and who he is in relation to the people of Israel. As I thought about it, I wondered, why did God choose this as the first word in his list of commandments? I mean, it doesn't even sound like a commandment at all, because it isn't telling us what to do or not to do like the others in the traditional Ten Commandment list, like honor the Sabbath, do not murder, etc. Those are all actions, either do this or don't do that. But I will repeat this. I am the Lord your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of bondage. But actually, I realized it does have an action. If I were to translate it myself, this is how I would put it. Trust in Adonai your God, etc. The action word in this commandment, I believe, is trust, or have faith in, believe in. And this is exactly what I would like to talk to you about today. A few lessons I have been learning about trusting in God, and I hope that you will all be encouraged. So lesson number one, trust that God is who he says he is. He is Adonai, the Lord, our God, who brought us out of slavery, out of bondage. He is our rescuer, our redeemer, our savior, our deliverer. He is in control of our lives, not us. We deceive ourselves to think that we are in control. And that is very easy to do when our lives are going smoothly and easy, no big trials or hardships, when we're able to seemingly provide for ourselves. But then, as soon as something goes wrong, you lose your job, someone you love dies, you get sick or have marital problems, and all of a sudden you realize you were never really in control. But then you may start to question God. If God is in control, then why did he allow this bad thing to happen? And here we see how we so easily break this first commandment by questioning and doubting God. Just like how the Israelites, after being rescued from Egypt, after seeing many miracles with our own eyes, we so quickly turn astray from God and question him. As soon as they face new trials in the desert, they were hungry and thirsty, so they questioned God. In Exodus 15:24, I believe this is from our parsha last week. So the people complained to Moses, saying, "What are we going to drink?" Then in Exodus 16:3, "If only we had died by the hand of Adonai in the land of Egypt, when we sat by pots of meat, when we ate bread until we were full. But you have brought us into the wilderness to kill this entire congregation with hunger." So only days after seeing God's miraculous hand, we were already mistrusting God, that he would provide food and water for us in the wilderness. Well, I hate to admit it, but I'm the same way. I think we all are. I will give an example from my personal experience. As you all already know about our house saga, I'll keep it brief. We bought a house last summer that ended up having more problems than we ever expected, and we've had to put a lot of money and work into fixing it up before we can even move in. Well, let me tell you, this has been the biggest test of my faith I have ever faced. I remember back in September when we were all packed up from our old house, which, thank you to the large group of rock friends here who helped us move into the truck that day. You all were amazing. But a few days later, when I found out that we wouldn't actually be moving into our house right away, or even for a long while, let's just say I didn't take the news well. I was an emotional mess, and I felt like I was approaching my rock bottom. Now, I know that this is just a house, and there are much greater hardships that many of you have faced. But with all the uncertainty and discovering more and more mold each day, I started questioning everything. I kind of yelled at God, and I challenged him, why did he let this happen? Why did he let us buy this moldy house? And I questioned myself. Were we even supposed to have bought the house, or did we make a huge mistake? See, I was just like our people, grumbling in the desert. Here I was, I had just been given a beautiful new house, and I so quickly turned away from seeing God's provision and doubted him instead. So in my desperation, I reached out to many of you, my faithful friends, for comfort and prayers, and to help get my perspective. I was weak and vulnerable, and I didn't try to hide or cover up my true feelings. Like the day I came into the office here, and when Shana and Eileen asked me, "Oh, how's the house going?" And I just broke down and cried, and they listened, and they hugged me, and they said, "It's going to be okay." Well, by God's grace, after that, I had a complete turnaround. I remember coming here for Rosh Hashanah services, and finally, I was able to pour my heart out to God during the service, and suddenly, I was overcome with his complete sense of peace that just enveloped me, and I felt like I heard him say to me, "Do you trust me? Do you really trust me?" Wow. I mean, I have had a relatively easy life, and thankfully, have not gone through many hardships before. And I realize that it's easy to have faith when everything is hunky-dory. But when I was put to the test, so to speak, I realized that God was challenging me to take my faith to a new level. The book of James, or Yaakov, 1 verses 6 through 8 says, "Ask in faith, without doubting, for the one who doubts is like a wave of the sea, tossed by the wind, double-minded." Ouch, that verse really convicted me. I was being so double-minded. And in one way, doubting is our own sin or a temptation from the enemy. How can we allow God to work in our own lives to rescue us, to deliver us, if we don't trust that he will? On the other hand, this is human nature, really. Look at David, as he wrote in many of his Psalms. He is completely double-minded. One minute, he's praising God. Psalm 46:2, "God is our refuge and strength and ever-present help in trouble. Therefore, we will not fear." But the next minute, he's crying out to God in desperation and fear. Psalm 69:1,
Save me, O God, for the waters have come up to my neck. I am worn out, calling for help. My throat is parched, my eyes fail, looking for my God. But the key is that David was going to God with all of his emotions, his praises and his joys, as well as his fears and his doubts. David is pouring out everything on his heart, the good and the bad. He's being real. We too need to be honest and transparent with God about our feelings, doubts, fears, and all. Not try to hide them or cover them up. Tell him everything. We can be honest with God, just like how we're able to unload or vent to our spouse or our best friend. We can talk to God that way too. We can tell him that we're having difficulty trusting him in a situation, and he won't be offended. He loves us no matter what. And that's not really being doubtful. Most of the time, after we're able to say how we feel, to get it off our chest, so to speak, just that is helpful enough to give us a better perspective, and it opens the door for him to help. If we can open our mouths, our hearts, and our prayers, then God can start to really work in our lives. So here's my advice. When you're going through a trial, say this prayer over and over again. Abba, help me to have faith. I trust you. Forgive me for doubting and questioning you. I trust you, God, with, and then fill in the blank, and list as many things as you can think of that you're struggling with trusting God about. I believe this can totally transform your circumstances when you're able to pray and pour your heart out to God. And this is how to trust that God is who he says he is. Now, I was given his peace that Rosh Hashanah day, but I have to make a daily choice to choose to trust God and who he says he is. I hear him asking me, "Do you trust me?" throughout the day, and I have to constantly choose to say, "Yes, I trust you." To continue on this same theme, the next lesson I have been learning is to believe God's promise that he will never leave us or forsake us. In Deuteronomy 31:6. So trust that he will never leave us or forsake us and will be with us always, even through our trials, our hardships, our mistakes and struggles. He goes with us out of Egypt and through the sea. I loved when I read this little nugget of truth in one of my daily devotionals. It comes from John 16, verse 33. Yeshua says, "In this world you will have trouble. But take heart, I have overcome the world." Yeshua is not saying here, you shouldn't have any problems or troubles in this world anymore if you believe in me, or that everything in your life will be easy or smooth and perfect. No, he says that we will have trouble, but he is our comfort still, not because he will always rescue us in the immediate moment, but because he has overcome the world through his resurrection. Just God's presence is comfort enough that he is with us always, right by our side. And we just have to be aware enough to realize and remember that he is with us. And he goes before us, like how the presence of the Lord went with the Israelites, leading us through the wilderness in a pillar of cloud by day and a pillar of fire by night. His presence was with our people then, and his presence is still with us. He goes with us everywhere we go, through the Ruach HaKodesh. He is with us always and will never leave us or forsake us. So even though he's always with us, we may not really understand why he allows us to go through our hardships and trials. So our next point is this. Ask God what he is doing in our trials, what he wants us to learn from them. I've been asking God this question a lot lately. And I feel like he gave me a verse, Yaakov 1:1, as part of my answer. Actually, I wrote it out, and it's taped up in my bedroom so I can read it every day. This is it. "Consider it pure joy, brethren, when you experience trials of any kind." Now let's unpack this. The verse doesn't say, if you experience trials. It says, when. So when we experience trials of various kinds, because we know that we will, then we should consider it joy? Wow. The disciples were perfect examples of this. When they would be put in jail, they did consider it joy. They rejoiced and sang praises to God while in their jail cells. And they used their time in prison to continue sharing the gospel with whoever would listen. But I have struggled with this in my experience. Maybe it's the Jewish stereotype, but I kind of enjoy complaining, grumbling, kvetching about my circumstances. I feel like I'm entitled. I deserve to complain when things don't go my way. And I found myself grumbling over the past months about how we don't have our own house, how it's taking so long, etc. But when I hear my own children complaining and whining, it sounds terrible. And I get on them about how we aren't supposed to whine in our family. As Nathan's dad has always said, we're joiners, not whiners. I'm so aware of my own hypocrisy, and it makes me realize, as a parent, that our heavenly Abba must not like hearing us complain, just like I don't like to hear my children whine and complain. So I've been chewing on this verse, how to find joy amidst my trials. We find joy when we focus on what we have rather than what we lack. I really felt convicted when the hurricanes hit in Houston and Florida and Puerto Rico this fall, and millions of people lost their homes and everything they had. Wow, I thought, I really shouldn't complain. Instead, I should count my blessings. I have so much. I have a roof over my head. I have clothes to wear, shoes to wear, my family, my children, friends, support, a loving faith community, a warm house to live in, enough food to eat, etc. So consider it pure joy when you experience trials of any kind. I'm still working on this, okay? But why should I consider my trials joy, you might ask? Well, let's move on to the next part of that verse. Because you know that the testing of your faith produces endurance, meaning it builds character. It makes us stronger in faith and in his strength. Now, being strong in God really means to recognize our own weaknesses because his power is made perfect in our weakness. We can do anything through him who gives us strength. These are powerful words because they show us who God is and who we are in relation to him. Remember from our parsha, he is Adonai, our God, who brought us out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of bondage. The testing of their faith, of our faith, gave the Israelites endurance to make it through the 40 years wandering through the desert. And endurance helps us through our trials as well. And my final lesson is, trust that he will use all things for good. Now we know that all things work together for good, for those who love God, who are called according to his purpose, Romans 8:28. I don't want this to sound cliche, but I'm learning that he really does use our trials for good. One of the good things coming out of the house saga is that I am better able to relate to other people who have gone through similar trials. So God often uses our hardships to minister to others who have or are suffering in similar ways. And finally, I will leave with one more verse from the book of Yaakov, which is so rich with wisdom. Yaakov 1, verse 12. Happy is the one who endures testing, because when he has stood the test, he will receive the crown of life, which the Lord promised to those who love him. Our reward may not be in this lifetime, but it will come when we receive the crown of life in Malchut HaShemayim, the kingdom of heaven. So I hope that this has been encouraging because I know many of you are going through your own trials and hardships right now. And like me, you could use a little encouragement. Let's all choose right now to actively follow this first commandment, this first word, to trust God, to have faith and believe in Adonai, the Lord our God, who brought us out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of bondage. Shabbat Shalom, everyone. Please.
So, Lord, our God, let the words of your Torah sweet in our mouths. Please, oh Lord, our God, let the words of your Torah sweet in our mouths, in the mouths of your people, in the mouths of the house of Israel, in the mouths of the people, in the mouths of the house of Israel. And may your descendants and the descendants of your people Israel be those who know your name and study your Torah. For Messiah.